Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
Welcome to Africa Link, coming to you live from Bonn in Germany. These are our main stories. South Sudan's President Salva Kiir pledges full commitment to a peace agreement signed with rebel leader Riek Machar.
Despite the continuous violation by the government of the Republic of South Sudan, we remain committed to the implementation of the peace agreement and permanent ceasefire to the fullest extent.
And a mass quarantine of over 700 people in Sierra Leone after a teenage girl died testing positive for Ebola dampens hope in the fight against the deadly outbreak.
We were very happy with the countdown of the Ebola, but suddenly, you know, we heard that there's an eruption of the same Ebola situation in the province, and that brought everybody back to apprehension, and we're not happy about it. It's so sad that we have to start again.
Stay tuned for all of that and more in the next 25 minutes. My name is Abubakar Jallo, your host.
Top story.
We begin in South Sudan, where President Salva Kiir has declared his full commitment to implement a peace agreement signed in August with rebel faction led by former Vice President Riek Machar. Speaking to reporters in the capital, Juba, Kiir said he had ordered his forces to respect the ceasefire agreement. And despite having some reservations, Kiir told journalists his top military commanders are on their way to attend a workshop in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. The commanders are supposed to learn how to implement a part of the peace deal referred to as the Transitional Security Arrangement. From Addis Ababa, Koleta Wanjohi reports.
In his speech to the nation, President Salva Kiir admitted that he was put under pressure to sign the peace agreement by the Regional Bloc Intergovernmental Authority for Development, IGAD, that has been mediating the South Sudan peace talks, as well as by countries from the Troika, that is, United States, United Kingdom and Norway, and the African Union. However, Kiir also said that he signed for the sake of his people and is ready to implement the agreements. To reiterate his commitment, he gave full mandate to military commanders from the National Army to participate in a five-day workshop with the rebel commanders, aimed at finding ways to implement a permanent ceasefire. The meeting, which began this Sunday, is expected to make plans to implement the security arrangements, explains Chief Mediator Seyoum Mesfin.
These inter alia include activities and timeline matrix of permanent ceasefire arrangements, such as the cessation of hostilities and disengagement of forces, separation and withdrawal of forces, assembly and cantonment of forces, redeployment of forces in the capital, and deployment of forces to provide security in Juba, Bor, Malakal and Bentiu, and other agreed areas, the transitional security arrangement.
The meeting will also be expected to deliberate on the establishment of a joint operation command and the release of prisoners of war. Lieutenant General Malek Ruben Riak is the leader of the military commanders from the South Sudan Army.
We are aware that it is not going to be easy. There are so many interests at stake, not only between us and our brothers and sisters in opposition side, but also other parties for different reasons. But as long as the end goal is peace, we are ready for its implementation.
The meeting is being attended only by the South Sudan government military and the forces of the rebel leader Riek Machar. But there are other armed militia groups in South Sudan that still exist and cannot be controlled and are not represented here. And even within these two military factions, there are reports that there are military officers who are not happy that their principals signed the peace agreement. Major General James Koang, commander of the rebel faction of Riek Machar, still blames the government's military for continued attacks against their bases, but says his commanders will participate in the five-day workshop.
Despite the continuous violation by the government of the Republic of South Sudan, we remain committed to the implementation of the peace agreement and permanent ceasefire to the fullest extent.
Even as the military commanders meet, there are reports of fighting in areas in South Sudan. Expectations are high on a solution for the integration of the rebel military in the National Army, but analysts say this cannot be done in 5 days.
Koleta Wanjohi reporting from Addis Ababa. Let's go now to Juba in South Sudan, where many had been waiting keenly on Tuesday to hear what President Kiir had to say about the peace deal in his address to the nation. Political scientist and lecturer at Juba University, Jacob Duchol, has been telling me that he wasn't exactly moved by that speech.
The speech was really not new, actually, because the whole idea was to talk to the citizens and to be able to tell them about his commitment to the implementation of the CPA 2, Compromise Peace Agreement. But the citizens were looking forward to get the idea of economic issues, especially the economy now is getting bad in the country.
So are you convicted that the president is committed to the peace?
This is quite difficult to tell that, because when the peace was signed, it was like a lot of pressure that was actually exerted on him. As a person, you know, he seemed to be very much committed. But you see, he's surrounded by a lot of other people that have their own interests, especially on the military side and all that. And therefore, when he wants to speak, he wants to speak with a lot of that unbalance, you know, or a lot of unobvious speech.
Independent observers have both accused President Kiir and his rival Riek Machar of violating the peace agreement that they've signed before. What's going to change this time around?
Well, it is quite really difficult now at the moment, because, you know, there were fighting that happened in Bentiu, in the other side of Great Upper Nile. And you got to find out that quite difficult to tell, actually, who is really involved in all this fighting, who started it. And again, it's going to be difficult as the process starts for the implementation of the compromise peace agreement, because, of course, a lot of these people who are on the ground sometimes are not known by the two leadership. At times, there's a lot of aggression from this side. You don't really know who did. And therefore, it will be very much important, actually, for the international community to be able to be on the ground, to send their own monitors.
President Kiir just made this speech a few days after government forces repelled a fresh rebel attack. Do you think this is going to derail this peace agreement?
That is really a challenge, actually, as we speak now, because it is not long since it signed on the 26th of August. And therefore, unless I say that there's a lot of the advances that are brought on the ground, on the villages level, on the Payam and the counties, really to see who is doing this. Otherwise, that's going to be a challenge, actually, going to be a challenge to see a really, really peace process moving forward, because the other groups who have their own intentions, you know, are not happy with the signing of the peace. And this group are the ones that need to be brought down, that need to be advised that there's a need for peace for South Sudanese.
Now, it's not a secret that President Salva Kiir does not trust his rival Riek Machar. Is there any sign in the country that tells you that this is it, this particular peace deal is going to hold?
Well, as you know very well, that this peace process is supposed to be the peace for the citizen. It's supposed to be a compromise peace agreement for the South Sudanese citizen, actually. The leaders are supposed to provide the opportunity for the citizen to really coexist and to be able to provide opportunities for the progress within the citizen of the country. And therefore, I do see that there is a great need now for the two leaders to be able to look, this is not their own peace, doesn't belong to two of them, it belongs to the South Sudanese citizen. And we look at the compromise peace agreement, has about 8 chapters. All these chapters that provide very clear, you know, grounds on issues to do with accountability, issues to do with the hybrid court, issues to do with reconciliations and economic reform, and so on and so forth. And therefore, despite the fact that the two may have their own differences as different individuals and people may not be happy on each other, there is a huge already ground of international community that's mentioned in the document that is able to help, and the regional bodies will help to make the two leaders go together to be able to implement the peace in these 2.5 years.
Jacob Duchol speaking from Juba, and you are listening to Africa Link with me, Abubakar Jallo.
News, analysis, and feature reports, all that here on Africa Link.
More than 3,000 people demonstrated on the streets of Kinshasa on Tuesday against what they said are plans by President Joseph Kabila to cling on to power after his constitutional mandate ends next year. The demonstration was the first since at least 40 people were killed in protest in the capital earlier this year. They were demonstrating against a revision to the electoral code, which critics say is a pretext to delay the presidential vote. The Democratic Republic of Congo's parliament has, as a result, dropped the proposed amendment. Our correspondent in Kinshasa, Patrice Chitera, describes to my colleague Assumpta Latus the mood in the capital after the riots.
Some key opposition figures were going to address supporters on the current political situation. But unfortunately, when some opposition speakers started to address supporters, the rally was disrupted.
What happened?
What happened is a man was arrested with a grenade and a gun. Apparently, he was heading to the stage where spoken opposition, a figure called known in Kinshasa as Gabriel Mokia, was speaking, and his arrest sparked a mood of panic, and people started running, and later police to intervene, shooting in the air to try to control the situation.
What are the opposition demanding for?
They're asking that President Joseph Kabila should give up his, what they say, his political maneuver of trying to cling on power, even after his current second term and the last has expired. And according to again, that the president is trying to make things complicated and not organizing the election as planned in November 2016 so that he can stay on power. So the opposition is asking that elections should be held as normal and steps should be taken from now, like registering young voters who are yet to be registered on the vote list.
How has the government reacted to these demands that the opposition are putting forward?
The president, despite the fact that he never spoke openly about it, but speaking through his supporters, his officials close to him, showed that he wanted the constitution to be changed, or he wants to cling to power. The ruling of coalition has been advocating even to completely change the constitution. One of them is an outspoken official, Claude Mashala, who questioned the constitution. There are even many others from the present coalition who often give make statements calling for the president to stay on power. Others have even written other publications calling for it.
Patrice Chitera in Kinshasa. And still to come, another mass quarantine in Sierra Leone in the fight against the deadly Ebola outbreak.
Behind the headlines.
In Behind the Headlines this week, we go to Kilimanjaro, Tanzania, where local farming has gained international recognition. The area known as Kihamba Agroforestry is centuries old multi-layered vegetation. The United Nations Body for Food and Agriculture, the FAO, has declared it as an important agricultural heritage site. It's said to be one of the most sustainable forms of farming in the world. Linda Stodd met with some of the farmers on Mount Kilimanjaro, and Andres Rosenberg presents her report.
Heavy rainfall pours down on the densely forested slopes of Mount Kilimanjaro, Africa's highest mountain. Its impressive peak is veiled in haze. Torrents of water transform the steep, winding path up the mountain into a mudslide, carrying soil along with it.
That's our problem here on the slopes. We lose our fertile soil to the people down in the lowlands. If we don't plant trees and protect the soil, we don't harvest anything.
That's farmer Fabiani Kileo, whose property lies about an hour's drive up the mountain in the village of Shambashimweshu. Though only small, with a handful of wooden huts and a few shops, this village is a significant one. A big sign along the roadside gives the village the special title of a globally important agricultural heritage site. Here, farmers cultivate the earth according to a centuries-old multi-layered vegetation structure known as Shamba Agroforestry, as Fabiani Kileo explains.
We have planted trees, banana trees, coffee shrubs, and vegetables.
The aim of the multi-layered structure is to maximize the use of land on the small Shamba home gardens. At the same time, the bigger trees provide shade, which the coffee shrubs need during the dry season. The agroforestry system dates back to the 12th century, and over time it evolved to incorporate coffee after the crop was introduced by missionaries in the late 1800s. A little further up Mount Kilimanjaro, Kilisti Kileo tours his small farm. A lonely cow grazes on a small patch of grass beside the stable. Behind Kilisti's hut, a steep, narrow path leads down the slopes through a dense jungle. Tree tomatoes grow here, as well as mangoes, coffee, and small green foliate plants whose name Kilisti can't recall.
These plants prevent erosion, and the leaves also serve as fodder for the cow.
The 82-year-old wades through the rain in his oversized rubber boots as he proudly points out his bananas. The trees, with their oversized leaves, have been planted almost everywhere on Kilisti's plot of land.
I'm not growing as many of the small plants here because the bananas protect the soil as well. A bit further down, I also grow coffee, but only a few of the shrubs are left.
While he could get a good price for the coffee, which is a major cash crop, Kilisti Kileo nowadays feels burdened by his age and has difficulty keeping up with the physical labor required. Even though the system of layering vegetation helps prevent soil erosion, it is still hard work.
We build terraces to slow down the water. That also helps to stop the earth from being washed away.
The terraces Fabiani refers to are the rows of ditches the farmers dig into the slopes, one below the other down the hill. Each ditch is about 2 meters deep and 1 meter wide, explains Kileo's neighbor Tadeusz Temba.
After a while, the ditches fill up. Then we take out the soil and put it back.
That is, they carry the soil up the steep slopes and distribute it among the plants. It's a lot of work, the farmers agree. Too much work for Kilisti Kileo, who is taking care of his shamba together with his wife. They have raised 9 children, but like many young people in Tanzania, they have left the rural area for better-paying jobs elsewhere in the country.
Our children just come to visit. They say hello, take some fruits and vegetables, and then they leave again.
Not only is the shamba agricultural system said to be one of the most sustainable in the world, and it supports an estimated 1 million people living in rural Africa, but the tradition is facing some challenges, especially in the wake of a drop in coffee prices on the world market. The FAO, the United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization, estimates that almost 1 in every 5 farms in the area has been abandoned or is in the process of being abandoned. The organization says this leads to deforestation and has massive environmental implications, such as erosion and desertification of the surrounding lowlands. To ensure the survival of the shamba system, the FAO project introduced vanilla as an additional cash crop. But it's been a bitter disappointment to the farmers, who hoped that being an internationally recognized site would earn them more than just a signpost. Here's Tadeusz Temba.
If the vanilla had grown here, we would have gotten a better price for it than for coffee beans. But the seedlings died. Vanilla plants don't like all the rain that we get here, and they don't like the cold either.
Though not every step of the FAO's plan to ensure the survival of the shamba system has been successful, the organization says that at least the global recognition of shamba shimwiju has contributed to wider acceptance of an ancient farming practice many considered outdated.
A report by Linda Stodd. Health authorities in Sierra Leone are grappling to stem another Ebola case that has led them to quarantine almost 700 people. This comes after a 16-year-old girl tested positive with the virus. The teenager died in the city of Makene that had not recorded a single case of the deadly virus in nearly 6 months. As Mutala Kamara reports from Freetown, hopes to defeat the deadly outbreak, which has killed nearly 4,000 people in Sierra Leone alone, has been dampened as a result of this new infection.
The Ebola virus disease, which erupted more than a year ago in Sierra Leone and elsewhere, was the worst outbreak in history. The disease claimed more than 3,000 lives in Sierra Leone alone and affected almost every sector in the country. There have been several efforts by the international community and the government of Sierra Leone to contain the deadly disease. Recently, Sierra Leone's president, Ernest Bai Koroma, discharged what was thought to be the last Ebola survivor from the treatment center, marking the start of the official countdown to 42 days for the World Health Organization to declare the country Ebola-free. Now, many Sierra Leoneans have expressed frustration following the recent announcement this week of the death of a teenager. The spokesman for the National Ebola Response Committee described the situation as a setback in the fight against Ebola. He said another front has opened in the Ebola fight. This development has upset many people, including Peter Lahai, who was hoping to continue his studies in the United States of America.
I am a Sierra Leonean student. I have sat to my West Africa Senior Secondary School's examination certificate. I have applied to read information technology at the University of Pennsylvania in the United States of America. I've already received my acceptance letter from the university, but because of the Ebola situation in the country, the university has asked me to wait until Sierra Leone is declared Ebola-free. I was really hoping that Sierra Leone will get down to the 42 days countdown and that the country will be declared Ebola-free. But with recent development, I don't know what to say. I am really frustrated.
Kade Kamara, Programs Officer for the Initiative for Media Development, also shares a similar sentiment.
I felt very disappointed when I heard of the new cases of Ebola because we had started the countdown. And it's rather disheartening to start hearing about Ebola again when we thought we had finally put Ebola to rest. And I feel very sorry for these communities. So as far as I'm concerned, I think these places need to be shut down. There should be restriction of movement, and then there should be house-to-house search for Ebola suspects or people that are feeling ill. And I think people should be sensitized all over again in these particular areas.
Mike Momo of Atlas Communications said the disease has affected almost every sector and has brought the nation to its knees.
Actually, you know, the countdown, you know, has been we'll be very happy with the countdown of the Ebola, but suddenly, you know, a couple of days now, we heard that there's an eruption of the same Ebola situation in the province, and that brought everybody back to apprehension, and we're not happy about it. It's so sad that we have to start again, even though it has really affected the country, you know, adversely, and every section, every sector of the country, both the entertainment, business, and so it has almost brought the country back to its knees. So with the countdown was very, very appreciated until this new one now. You know, but this recent development in the province is very sad. We're scared.
Lahai said even though efforts are ongoing to contain the disease, but he said the government must do more to sensitize the people in the provinces if the Ebola is to end in the country.
I personally think that the government and its partners still need to put mechanisms in place to educate our people in the rural areas about this Ebola disease, because that is where all the cases are coming from now.
Mutala Kamara reporting from Freetown.
Opinion.
In opinion this week, we go back to our top story. We have heard that South Sudanese President Salva Kiir has fully committed himself to ending his country's civil war. What do you think of his commitment? Will he really respect this peace agreement? Send us your thoughts in an email to feedback.africa@dw.com, in a letter to AfricaLink, DW 53110 Bonn, Germany, or in a text message to country code 49160-957-59510.
Listen to Africa Link whenever you want. Sign up for our podcast at dw.com/Africa Link Podcast.
And now a reminder of the main stories. South Sudanese President Salva Kiir has pledged full commitment to a peace agreement signed with the rebel faction led by former Vice President Riek Machar. Violent clashes broke out Tuesday in Kinshasa when an opposition rally was attacked by unidentified youth, sparking a lynching attempt and a police crackdown. And we've also been hearing about local farming practices in Tanzania that have gained international recognition. There, we come to the end of this edition of Africa Link. Do join us again at the same time tomorrow. And as always, thank you for listening. My name is Abubakar Jallo from Bonn in Germany.